All right. Well, we can go ahead and get started. First of all, thank you all so much for being here with me today. I know that the pandemic has made a lot of these things way more stressful than they used to be, and there was already a certain level of stress to these things. So I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today. And I just wanted to start off, you know, by asking, you know, kind of what, from a creative standpoint, you know, how has, you know, how difficult has it been to create during this particular time?
Well, when it when the pandemic first started, it was a bit of a curveball for us, because we were in the middle of our album campaign, and it was due to come out. I believe our initial release date was sometime in April, and of course everything popped off in March. So we kind of had to come up with some contingency plans on things that we had scheduled to do. We were actually supposed to go over and tour in Australia around April as well, and that didn't happen with Tame Impala. So obviously that got mixed, and then everything else was a scramble from that point on. But the creation process, I think creativity never really leaves. I think it just shows different facets, and it kind of displays what's happening in the moment. Sometimes you feel like writing things that are more upbeat if you're in a happy-go-lucky kind of mood, or if things are kind of subdued and you're sad, that's going to come out, you know. But creativity just is what it is, you know. There are times where, you know, if you are kind of down in the dumps, you don't necessarily feel creative. But I think if even in those moments, if you were to actually sit down to do something, something would come out, and it would be a reflection of the moment.
Yeah. I think it was particularly hard at the beginning, because we had just finished an album, and making an album is a huge thing. You know, you think it's just the music and you're done, and it's not just the music. Then you're, you know, mixing and adding, and then it's the visual stuff. And it's such a huge thing to get off your chest as a group. So to have just finished that when the pandemic started, it was really hard to go, let's do another one, mm-hmm. you know, because emotionally you finish the album and then you tour it, and you have this period where you kind of celebrate what you made. And we missed that mm-hmm. period of celebration. So it's been postponed, which we're about to embark on now, God willing. But, you know, after a few months, we just started kind of opening up some unfinished projects and got into those, rather than putting the pressure of like having to create something completely new. We tied up some loose ends, and I'm really happy that we did that. So new stuff to come.
I can relate to that. I am also a musician, and I released my first album in 2015, and I'm a guitar player. And within like 3 weeks of the album coming out, I broke my pinky. So I was out like for 8 months. Different situation, but I can relate to, you know, to that. So as, you know, as we're kind of talking about like the, you know, coming to Lexington and playing Railbird this weekend and kind of starting that off fresh, what are you, well, I guess I should, you know, preface it with this. Like, when I started playing music again after I broke my finger, my mindset was completely different. You know, my approach to like appreciating the amount of time being on stage and being with people, kind of going through a similar situation on a much more extreme level with this. What are you kind of looking forward to or thinking about, you know, ahead of like being in front of people again and, you know, kind of trying to go back to some kind of normal?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's impossible anyway to just go back on stage like this thing didn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that would mm-hmm. be an impossibility. But I think it's actually important to keep that in mind. It's like, we're not going to get back up on stage and have the muscle that we did in 2019 when we were playing every night. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But equally, people haven't been at shows. So I think it's been trying in the sense that because of different COVID regulations and everything happening in the world, a lot of the prep leading up to shows has been spent discussing how we're going to be safe on tour rather than what the set list is going to be.
Right.
But I kind of have to look at it that I'm going to play with my best friends on stage and, mm-hmm. and just really appreciating that period. And it's not about playing a perfect set, you know, for me personally in a performance, it's like, we get to play again. And that's the real thing to appreciate. And that's a beautiful thing, you know. But obviously, I'll try to play perfectly.
Yeah, it's like Miles Davis used to say, you know, you play one note and just play it over and over again with emphasis.
Yeah. I remember learning that early on because somebody told me, like, psyched me out before a show that as a bass player, you know, you're only really responsible for one note at a time, but if you play a wrong note, you know, it can really throw off everything. So Mark and DJ were like, it's cool, just really play that note wrong, you know?
And then the flip side of that coin is you can play a wrong note and it can feel so right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, are there any wrong notes?
Good cue.
That's a great question. Well, I don't know if you all know this, but you have something in common with Taylor Swift. She released two albums last year, and so did y'all. So I'm really curious. One, you know, what was the process of, you know, of releasing two albums within the same year, especially in, you know, in the pandemic? Was that something that had already kind of been planned, or were things changed because of it? And then my follow-up question would be, you know, how did the album with Leon Bridges kind of, you know, how did that happen?
We were touring with Leon in 2018. So that was kind of a natural progression that happened. We were on tour, Cinema Song. He sent the song back with him kind of humming an idea over it with some light lyrics. And, you know, it was like, hey, we should record this. And that's what turned into the Texas Sun EP. Originally, it was just going to be one song. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, if we put out a song, it needs to a B-side. So we did another one. It's like, well, let's just keep going. That's just a natural thing that happened. And it's so weird to even consider that project coming out in 2020, because in my mind, I don't know when it came out, but it definitely came out in February of 2020.
Yeah.
Right before everything kind of flipped upside down.
It was our first like billboard in Times Square. I mean, it was like a digital billboard, but it was one of the last things I did before lockdown that I like really remember was going to see the Texas Sun digitally in Times Square. And it was awesome. And then everything shut down. I think for some reason, the collaboration with Leon Bridges kind of feels like, because it's a side project, it doesn't have the weight and the emotional sort of drain, not in a bad way, that releasing your own album did. Mm-hmm. Like Mordecai's took a lot, felt like, out of all of us to put out. But that the collaboration just seems like a fun side thing that you do to distract yourself from the main thing that you do. So I don't think it, I don't know. I don't think it felt weird to put out two albums in that way.
And, you know, the first thing that I thought of when I saw that you all were going to be on the bill was, oh, is it possible for a collaboration at Railbird? And you all are both playing on two different days. So I'm going to go ahead and guess that that's not happening. And I guess if it's a secret, maybe you could just pretend to tell me and I won't tell anybody.
No, you guessed. I mean, we're playing on two different days. So when that... I think the stars aligned for us at the last festival we played. We were actually playing on the same day right ahead of Leon. So he came out and performed Texas Sun with us, and it was a cool moment. It was only the second time we played it live together, the first time being in Houston and then the second time being at Hinterland Festival in Iowa. But it's kind of one of those things that the moon and the stars have to align for it to happen.
What would you say, you know, not to just keep harping on this, because I'm sure you're asked about it a lot, but, you know, we've all gone through a really traumatic situation. The pandemic still is ongoing. But I feel like through this time, one of the best things as people we have been able to do for each other is kind of show our resilience. What would you say is, you know, something that you learned about yourself through this process and, you know, through this time, whether it be, you know, creatively, artistically, or, you know, something else?
I really just got in touch with home. I don't know if it's something I necessarily learned about myself other than I really love being home. Mm-hmm. But I had been disconnected from that part of my life for a long time, through touring, but also from, I was in London before we started touring, and that was the last place I really had a home. And when I moved to be stateside kind of for the band, I didn't really settle in anywhere. And then I was nomadic. And so thanks to the quarantine, I now have a home that I've really dug into. Mm-hmm. And I kind of been more connected to what that feels like, which feels really anchoring for me now to go back on the road knowing that I have my nest to fly home to when it's time.
Yeah, for me, it was just a moment of reflection. I hadn't spent like really solid time with my wife in the last, I think prior to that, 3 years, because I was kind of just in and out on the road. You'd go tour for 3 weeks and then you'd be home for maybe 2 weeks and then you head right back out. And it's just a constant cycle of that over and over. Yeah, it was the longest time I'd spent with her consecutively without having to leave in quite a while. And it was nice. And we got to hang out and bond and really focus on each other. So it was a special time for us.
So one thing that I think about a lot, you know, especially with one conversation that seems to have come up through last year, in addition to the pandemic, is people are starting to pay more attention to inclusion and, you know, and being, having more representation. And as a Black person, especially Black person in radio, representation is incredibly important to me. You know, and I really was happy to see you all on the festival bill, you know, not just because you all are awesome, but it's like this is somebody different that people can be exposed to in a different way. And, you know, maybe there are some people that can look on stage and see themselves within all of you all. What does that mean to you, especially in this particular time? And is that something that, you know, that you think about from time to time?
100%. We are always thinking about inclusion and finding ways to finding the connections, the things that connect us all. We're known for being world music crate diggers and being influenced from music all over the world. And yeah, inclusion is super important. And as you mentioned, seeing someone, you know, that may look like you doing what they do is really important. I mean, one of the other bands playing at Railbird, I grew up listening to Dave Matthews Band, and the drummer Carter, he looks like me. Mm-hmm. And growing up, I was like, wow, that's really cool. And it's a really cool full circle moment to be sharing a festival billing with DMV. And it, you know, it was a really special thing. And it's important for me to have seen that in my younger years to know that it is possible. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, these guys.
Oh, no, I think inclusion and making music for as many people and having our crowds be as varied as possible has always kind of been a goal. And it's a reflection of who we are. We kind of want our crowds to look like us, which is not the same. And we didn't become friends because we're different. We became friends because we became friends. But right. I think it is a really special thing about us that our, you know, our friendship exists in this different bubble. We didn't grow up together. We don't have the same friends. We didn't go to the same high school. And we look different. And I think that's great. And I think we make music that is in the Venn diagram of all of us. And so we hope that the place where we intersect intersects with other people too. You know, it's undeniable that you connect with people that look like you or that feel like you. You know, I love Selena, and Selena was a, you know, Tex-Mex lady herself who didn't speak Spanish. And that's basically me. I speak about as much as she did, and I love her. And my mom grew up idolizing Gloria Estefan, or like, and she looks like my mom. So I think it's incredibly important.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, representation matters for sure. You know, I think that, you know, making music is such a wonderful thing. And I feel like, especially in terms of like funk, you know, the way that the one is seen kind of globally in like all kinds of music. You know, you go to, you know, to West Africa or East Africa and you hear, you know, you hear the one. It's just emphasized in a different place. You know, you go to Asian countries and you'll hear it in a similar way. You know, as musical sponges as we all are, what have you what are the connections with music that you found that are like, I don't know, maybe the most surprising in terms of like, oh, of course this scale works in, you know, in this particular process, because it's all music. We all get it from the same place. But like, is there something particularly that's like, I never thought about it that way, that you were surprised by?
Man, this is such a Mark.
I know.
I wish Mark was here. So Mark and I played at the same church for like 10 years. And when he and I first started hanging out, he was the first person that I knew to listen to music that, you know, wasn't in English, you know, outside of Tejano, because I knew a ton of people that listened to Tejano music growing up in Houston. But Mark was listening to things from like, you know, Southeast Asia, stuff in, you know, different languages, you know, very, to me at the time, very exotic types of music. But the one thing I found, as you mentioned, funk, is that the funk was still present in all of this stuff that he was listening to. I just didn't understand what was going on, you know, lyrically, but I knew everything. I understood what was going on, you know, musically. And it's like, man, this is really good stuff that I would have never have come across if it hadn't been for Mark and his eclectic taste in finding music that specifically is not in English, that has a certain, you know, quality to it. So that was one of the most surprising things that I found, is that, like, you know, American music isn't the only music that has that quality. You know, it's all over the world.
Yeah. I think for me, one of the things I find infinitely fascinating is how much language affects rhythm and feel of a place. And so you'll find, like, in Southeast Asian countries, one of the things that's really incredible are the melodies that come out of their places. And because their languages are tonal, it creates these more intricate patterns that you can have melodically, because they have so many different, you know, levels within that. And then you think about like Ethiopian music, it's what, all in seven? The right?
No, it's just six, usually.
Six,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not a time Turkish, person.
Turkish is like weird time. Well, not weird, right. But you know, like fives and sevens. Yeah, they get in there.
But you find that, you know, languages that are more percussive tend to have more intricate rhythms. And it's really beautiful the way that it happens so naturally.
Yeah, like it's funny that you mentioned seven. That's one of the fascinating things I saw, like, I think we were in Istanbul and I was in the hotel and I heard a car just blasting music going down the street in seven. And I was like, that's not something you would hear back home unless someone was really into some like niche, you know, metal. But right. You know, it was just, they were just, and it's weird because like, even though it's in seven, like you can play this music like at a wedding or something, and all the grandmas, they, you know, they're all clapping in this really, really odd time signature. Everybody's on it.
But it makes sense to them.
But it makes sense, yeah. And it makes sense to me. I love it.
Me too.
Yeah, it's a really special thing.
Well, you mentioned Turkish music, so I have to take a second to just say, if you have not heard of Yavuz Şetin, he's like the Jimi Hendrix of Turkey. He passed away in 2001, but he was an incredible dude, and his music's great, so you should check that out.
I was just say thanks so much for having us. It's been really great.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you.
Yeah, I really, like I said, I really appreciate you all being who you are, making the music that you do. It's a beautiful thing, and it is much needed, especially during these times. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today, because especially I know that, especially with the protocols around this festival, that there are things happening that weren't happening in the past. So thank you for bearing with us on that one.
100%.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, enjoy the festival. And, if you get to see Lexington at all, I hope you appreciate it. And next time you're in the area, feel free to stop by.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. You have a great day.
Thank you, too. Take care.